So the first step is really creating that self-awareness. And again, it begins with curiosity. So if you're not curious, nobody's really asked the question, what is type 2 diabetes? It's a disease of the cell. It's not a disease of carbohydrates or eating too many carbs or eating bananas. So that's where the self-awareness begins. So that's how you begin. And then number two is you start asking questions about, so you came in here today and I want to lose weight. Is that really, really what you want? No, I want to move better. I want to feel better. But we got to get more specific. So the more you drill down in that, I come in here and I want to improve my cholesterol. But really, is that really what you want? That's part of it. So the more you can drill down and get real specific of what you want, if you do want to lose weight, for example, tell me what that weight is.
Get specific.
When do you want to, where do you want to be? Why do you want to be that way?
All right, we're back in the studio, Rest, Eat, Move podcast. This week, we're going to recap our whole methodology from step one. And the reason we're going to do that is we've dumped some information over the last several podcasts on know your numbers, improving your numbers. We've talked about cholesterol, hormones, supplementation, and all those things are very valuable and hopefully leading you down a good path of creating a process around taking care of your greatest asset. But I think one of the pieces that I see across our society right now is this information overload, whether it's using AI or listening to all these podcasts. And one of the missing elements when it comes to our health, when it comes to sustainability and lifestyle, is behavior change. And I wouldn't say this is the sexiest topic to talk about, but behavior change is, to me, the missing element in the process. Let's just say you're trying to lose weight, and I give you all the X's and O's. Work out 3 to 5 times a week, do the recovery, get the sleep, do the nutrition. But if we truly are not tapping into the way that humans change behavior, we're going to start something, and at some point, that's not going to be a habit, and then we're going to stop. And so we have to address behavior change. That's what we're going to talk about today. In the Rest, Eat, Move book, it's the first part of the book is talking about behavior change. And so today, we're going to circle back and really illustrate why behavior change is so important and how you can think about it, whether you're trying to start a new healthy lifestyle or you've been on this journey and want to continue to go deeper and deeper. So, Dad, welcome in. You to me, when I first saw your presentations as a kid, I would say behavior change was the meat and potatoes of your presentation. Talk to the listeners why you implemented that 30 plus years ago and how in today's viral, trendy, 30-second attention span, it's more important than ever, but it's harder than ever to really get people to understand that.
Because you do a really good job of this, but when you're trying to present to a larger groups of people, you have to capture their attention very quickly. And so the first thing I realized over time with trial and error, making lots of mistakes, is how do you do that? And we'd get the audience up moving around. We had music, energy's going high. And then I started asking them questions. So now they're engaged. Now I ask them questions. What do you want? How many of you want to have better energy? How many of you like a better sleep? Get off of medication, lose some weight. So now they're already jumping in because now they're sharing with you what they'd like to do. But I would start the presentation with behavior change, and I would really close it with behavior change because it's not just about information, it's what you do. That's true wisdom, is taking what you know and applying that into your daily habits. And so I realized a long time ago, especially through personal training, that it's what are they doing when I'm not around? Like you work with somebody, and it was a model we changed back in the day at the Michigan Athletic Club, is I don't want to train you 5 days a week. I want to train you once or twice a month, but I want to teach you everything about it that you can do it on your own. And so now you're doing that. Now we're moving from extrinsic motivation to intrinsic motivation. They're doing it because they want to, not because they have to. And so that's why behavior change is such a big deal, because people want these things, but they don't really know how to apply it, how to do it. it might do it for a short period of time, but it doesn't last. That's really why when I wrote Rusty Move, I spent the first section talking about behavior change. Let's get this right, because I can give you information all day long, and you're seeing this everywhere, so it's so confusing out there. But really, what are some of the main things you need to do, practice, and put them into your life?
So I have this on page 17. I have this pyramid. We like pyramids and circles and charts and graphs.
Yeah, you're right.
You're working on probably a new handout for me to print out for everybody. So get ready for that. But there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There's 5 steps to reach this goal. So envision this pyramid, and at the top is your goal. Lose weight, get off medications, have better energy, be stronger, fitter, function, win a 5K, whatever it is, your goal. So there's 5 steps. Where I watch, and I'm a consumer of content, or a content juggernaut. We consume way more content and information than ever before, like by a bazillion percent. But it begins to me always at step 4 of the 5. The step, the action, the trendy thing. You got to do the cold plunge, got to do the hot and cold therapy, got to do the red light, got to do the infrared sauna. You're going to have to get the darkening shades to sleep better. It's all about the steps. And I think when we just continue to get so fixated on that, because me and you, if somebody asks a really good question, what do I need to do? That's really easy to answer. Do this, do this, do this, do this. But we really struggle with that. Me and you both struggle with that. If we were at dinner with someone we've never met and they asked us, what do I need to eat? We're like a deer in the headlights. That's not the right question. Because of these other 3 steps in behavior change. So let me just list the 5 steps. Number 1 is self-awareness. And we're going to come back to this and hammer it, because this is the most important. Number 2 is, what do you want? Specificity of the goal that you're trying to accomplish. Number 3 is the emotional connection to the want. Just having a New Year's resolution does nothing because there's no emotion. So that's number 3. And then we move into what that step is, or the next small step. And then we have to measure. And then we reach the goal. What I'm seeing in our society, as we're becoming so fixated on information and that step and what's the next thing to do, and let me listen to another Andrew Huberman podcast of this next trend, which I think can be great and fantastic, but we've missed the 3 parts that are the most important for behavior change. So you created this. We talk about this. We used to have 75 minutes to 90 minutes to do a keynote presentation. Now we're lucky if we get 45 minutes. And so we've had to tailor this down and do it in different ways. And as we do a podcast, maybe we have 35 minutes. As we create a social media post, maybe we have a minute. As we have an email, maybe they're going to read the first couple sentences. This is deep, but so important. Talk to us about self-awareness, finding what you want, and that emotional connection of why.
Well, as you mentioned, self-awareness is where it all begins. And so I have a discovery session handout that I use, again, back to the handouts, and I'll start asking all these questions, like, how many breaths do you take per minute? How many hours of sleep do you get? How much water do you drink? How much do you actually move?
Can you hang from a bar?
Can you hang from a bar?
Can you get on the floor?
Yeah. We did last week. We did know your numbers. What's your home assistant?
Do you know some of these numbers?
Yep. So it really gets back to, you start asking these questions, and what you reveal very quickly, and this is what we've done in our speaking, I'll tell a story and they'll start realizing that, I never knew that by taking a anti-inflammatory medication with a cholesterol medication lowers my testosterone. This is self-awareness. They have it, they don't know it. So that's where you begin. And it's interesting, you were just showing me a hip opener exercise. You didn't know you had that, right? You didn't know you had the external rotation issue on one side versus the other. We all have them. So the first step is really creating that self-awareness. And again, it begins with curiosity. So if you're not curious, nobody's really asked the question, what is type 2 diabetes? It's a disease of the cell. It's not a disease of carbohydrates or eating too many carbs or eating bananas. So that's where the self-awareness begins. So that's how you begin. And then number two is you start asking questions about, so you came in here today and I want to lose weight. Is that really, really what you want? No, I want to move better. I want to feel better. But we got to get more specific. So the more you drill down in that, I come in here and I want to improve my cholesterol. But really, is that really what you want? That's part of it. So the more you can drill down and get real specific of what you want, if you do want to lose weight, for example, tell me what that weight is.
Get specific.
When do you want to, where do you want to be? Why do you want to be that way? Blah, blah, blah. And then from there, we move up into the emotional piece, which is your why. And that could be a large or a small why. But when you really start drilling down into the emotional piece, that's what gets people to move. And so, and then from there, as you mentioned.
So let's pause there for a second. So as I was thinking about self-awareness, you have this story about, is it Grabwell
Gromit?
Yeah. And it's an interesting story. He's talking about his life, but he doesn't even realize he's talking about his life. And we'll save that for you to read it. But I think a lot about symptoms. We're so fascinated with symptoms. And what if you looked at symptoms through the lens of weight or excess weight is a symptom. Type 2 diabetes is a symptom. Anxiety is a symptom. Digestive health issues are a symptom. When we look at them from a disease standpoint, and I'm not saying that these aren't diseases, that's a whole different conversation, but when you look at them through a symptom, you actually have more of an ability to create self-awareness, not to create blame, not to say it's my fault, not to say that I'm bad because I made these choices or have this lifestyle. Self-awareness gives us actually exponentially more power. And so in the book, you put having the awareness that you must make a change is step one in your pursuit of feeling and being your best. But if you don't even know, so you were talking about external, I actually have both probably external, but mostly internal rotation of my hip. I've done hip openers for years, but there's subtleties. Where is that internal rotation the most impinged? Is it at the beginning? Is it the middle? Is it the end? Is it when my back is flexed or extended or my arms are over my head? Like there's a lot to it. Same thing when it comes to our health. If you're coming in here and you say, I'm going to eat less calories, my small step, because my goal is to lose weight, but we didn't even have the self-awareness that we're not even sleeping 5 hours a night, or we don't have the self-awareness that I haven't had a bowel movement in 4 weeks, or I'm being exaggerating,
yeah,
but
sure.
So we get so focused on the symptom, we never have the opportunity to see the source. And when you start with self-awareness, you have a much greater chance to find the source for all the goals, even on top of maybe what you originally thought.
Well, again, what you're saying too, you have to put curiosity in front of self-awareness. And so I was talking to a couple of my clients yesterday, and they were so fun to be with, but we were just talking about inflammation. And one of the things you always got to ask the question about, okay, so my body aches, but it's a symptom. Why is my body aching? What is it? Where is it coming from? Now I'm starting to drill down. You mean I don't have to have this, or I can improve this? Or so that's really where the curiosity really will drive that self-awareness. Like you just keep asking those questions. Why do you want your hip to have better internal or external rotation? Because you want to run and you want to play golf and you want to do this and that. So now we're looking at, okay, so now what do I need to do? What do I need to, how do I need to, do I need a massage? Do I need to hot and cold therapies? Versus like you said at the beginning, these are just steps. What we're missing the front end of.
I'm going in because my hamstring kind of bothers me. But as you peel it back, it's my back. It's my spine. It's my hips. It's my deep tissue. It's my fascia. And so you can go in there and I could wrap my hamstring and I could start running. I could get new shoes. I could do a couple exercises. But I'm going at it from the lens of what's possible. Now, not everything am I motivated enough to spend 24 straight hours. I have a life and other things that, but it's part of it.
And I think sometimes we look at what brings that to the forefront. Well, brings it to the forefront because something's bothering me, back to the self-awareness. So again, you don't have to overwhelm yourself with some of these things.
But it also goes back to our stuff on knowing and listening to the body.
Correct.
Curiosity.
Mm-hmm. So when the body's, again, back to the self-awareness, it's going to tell you a lot that something's out of whack. Again, as you mentioned, these are so-called symptoms. That's where it all begins. And just having the curiosity, ask better questions, what can I do differently? But a lot of people don't have that. If they don't have that curiosity at the very beginning, they're not going to have much self-awareness. It's like Dave Ramsey and all of his stuff talks about is, are you even aware? Now you start adding it up, look at your budget. These are all self-awareness tools that now you say, okay, I don't want to keep doing the same stuff.
Yeah. And you also write self-awareness is the ability to step out aside of yourself to make a calculated conscious decision. It's hard. It's not easy. Self-awareness is actually it's a skill.
And the other thing too, sometimes you want to surround yourself with people that can help you. So whether it's your physical therapist or a psychologist or a mentor, friend, whatever it might be, family member. But again, sometimes it's hard to do that. Like sometimes we've done speaking in the past and I'll ask somebody to sit in the audience and I said, here's what I want you to do. I want you to write down everything that you loved about the presentation. So then that creates more self-awareness for me. Wow, this is what they really liked about it. And then I want you to tell me things that you didn't like about the presentation. And it's sometimes not easy to hear, but if I don't have that help, I don't. So that's where you have to be able to ask for some of those things. And sometimes it's not always the information you want to hear, but if you want to get better, that's how it begins.
Yeah, that's a coach. That's why most people have coaches at some level. Is to push and to expose.
And it doesn't have to be brutal, but at the same time, you just want to be honest. Okay, this is what's going on and this is what can improve. And that's what's fun. I mean, way back in the day, I remember having a woman that said to me, I have a lot of potential in the speaking world, but she listed all these things. I didn't really want to hear it, but boy, it was great information for me to slowly improve over time because I did want to improve.
And then what do you want is, to me, the most exciting thing. But unfortunately, I can't tell you how many times people have no specificity. Whether it's, I think our primal survival tactic is more in line with avoiding or adapting to whatever wherever we're at. So if we're 30 pounds heavier than we really want to be, we can get used to it. If we haven't gone to the bathroom the way that we think we should, we will get used to it. If we haven't drank enough water, you'll still probably be living. So I think that's where the want is so important, is take a chance to dream and have a vision. And I talk about getting above the clouds, like, anything is possible. And so you were talking about diabetes. I don't think most people even believe that they can reverse their type 2 diabetes. So why would they even write this down that they want it? And that's why self-awareness is always more important. If I make a video and the video is reverse type 2 diabetes, not too many people will watch it. There's some different ways to hook people and get people to watch it, but because the people that I'm talking to, reversing the people that have it, I think majority of them believe that they're going to have it the rest of their life. And so this step 2 is really critically important, but it only happens after step 1. But I'm really talking to everyone listening is push yourself, stretch yourself. I'm doing these things. What do I want? I still want to run a 5-minute mile. Now, the way that I do that is much different than when I was trying 5, 10 years ago. But again, that's because my self-awareness just continues to get bigger and bigger and bigger and expose those things.
I think, for example, I'll do a 12-week plan from Brian Moran's 12-week year, and I do a fitness health, and I put on there, these are some stretches. This is what I want to weigh. This is the strength I want. This is the mobility I want. I put that down. I want to have this energy. I want to this sleep. So you're exactly right. For example, in the self-awareness piece, once you start diving into that a little bit, you have to dig a little bit. But then when you get into the what do you want, then you need to, when I'm working with clients, I'll ask them, is that really what you want? And they'll say, and then we start diving into the why, you realize that's not really exactly what they want. And then, so once you uncover that, really get focused on what they truly want. I want to have vibrant health. What is that? What does that really mean to you? Or I want to have greater strength. What does that mean to you? So we need to have a couple small steps along the way as we lead to that. But the more you can get specific with what do you want, and really, like you said, dream, that gets exciting. I will say to some of my clients, how would you like to be medicated free the rest of your life? They're like, what? I'm not saying you can't use medications or that it might come into place, but just have that belief, that thought that maybe I don't need to be on all these medications. So, and then we dive into, okay, now what's driving that, which is leads into the behavior of the why.
Yeah. And then once we go to step three, the why, again, this to me, as you scour the internet, listen to the podcasts, this to me is missing the emotional connection to the outcome that you're after. I think I wrote down here as we were beginning today, I think we're so fixated on this honeymoon stage. That's what viralness is. That's what the most amount of views we'll have. That's what about the most amount of podcasts is, that honeymoon phase, that exciting phase, that peak engagement. The problem is, as we all know, if you're obsessed with Taylor Swift, like it's your dream to just touch her like arm as she walks past, and then all of a sudden, maybe you marry someone that's sisters of Taylor Swift. I don't even know if she has sisters. I know nothing about Taylor Swift. And then you start to spend every holiday time with her. It's really not that exciting anymore to touch her sleeve. That's what's happening in our world of nutrition, education, exercise. This is the new trend. This is the new thing. And we forget that you have to have an emotional connection to what you're trying to accomplish. And to me, that's not as easy. Finding your why, whether it's your purpose in life, that's deep. Finding your why, finding your purpose about what you want when it comes to health is also deep. But you write many times about the story about the women that were doing the weight loss competition, and you asked them what their why was, and their why was the loser. So the loser of this competition had to eat a can of cat food. And so their big why is they didn't want to lose. That's a small why. It's funny. But then you talk about this woman that was doing one of our programs, and her why is she realized she was needed by her old or her disabled son, who as he grew older required more physical support from her. And so early on, it wasn't really her thought. She's just trying to survive, take care of other people. But she realized if she didn't take care of herself, she couldn't take care of him as he got older. And her why was she wanted to be healthier and stronger so she could take care of her disabled son as he grew older. Think of how powerful that why is. And so that's something in our society, as I think we get so fixated on what the scale says or how we look or the extrinsic stuff. The why really starts to go after that intrinsic piece.
When I think you were talking about the valley, you're talking about this
journey of change. Yeah.
You have this honeymoon stage, as you mentioned, everything's exciting, shiny penny. And then, as we all know, the honeymoon stage will disappear. But then we go into this thing called the Valley of Despair. And the Valley of Despair is the third part of the journey. And that's when people give up. They lose hope. They lose belief. But when you have a powerful why, it pulls you out of the mud. And so every story, like the woman with a disabled son, or the woman that lost 200 pounds starting her journey at 65 years old, those all had these powerful whys that pulled them out of the mud. Because we all know it's not easy. You're going to have hiccups.
If it's easy, it's not going to give you the outcome you want.
Yeah. And so then as time goes on, which leads you after you, again, the cat food story is a small, funny, short-term why. But then when you get into these deeper emotional ones, which is really hard to sometimes dig out of people, because that, like I was reading Atomic Habits and listened to it that last weekend when I was going to see my brother in Tennessee and him and his wife, Juliet. And one of the things in the Atomic Habits I really liked a lot about that is you change your identity. You start changing your identity. Now you're looked upon, you think of yourself completely different. And I think that's the big thing. Like when you look at the woman that wanted to be healthy for her disabled son, she started changing her identity. The woman that lost all the weight so she could ride a motorcycle with her husband, she changed her identity. And that's part of that whole why. And then when you have that change in identity, then everything starts to shift. It's a completely different mindset that even if the chocolate cake's there, I can eat it if I want to, but I don't have to eat it. Or I'm moving my body because I want to, not because I have to, which leads into a habit and rituals. And that's where people go. And once you get that why going on, and you start, as the why gets going, you start changing your identity. And now you're looked upon, you think of yourself differently, which allows you, if you think of yourself as a drinker or a smoker or whatever it is, I'm not a fit person, you have to slowly get people to change their identity. And once they do that, then they start rolling.
So stage one, honeymoon stage, this is the journey of change. It's different than behavior change, but it's part of it. Stage one, honeymoon, we all understand that. It's exciting. Think of it as when it comes to health, it's like the New Year's resolution.
Yeah.
Or it's the new trend. Ozempic was that in the honeymoon stage. But always, not sometimes, but always, the honeymoon is over. And it's during this stage where you lose some motivation, where it's not as exciting, where it requires a little bit of energy. I think people do a good job stage one, stage two. Stage three was when the seed has been planted, but it's going to require a little effort for it to start to sprout. And this is where it's difficult. This is where people give up. They feel stuck. They maybe plateau. They've been doing it and it's, I can't lose any more weight. The numbers aren't moving. So in my case, if I was just going with this valley and I got to going with this journey of change and I got to this valley of despair where I've been dealing with this for 3.5 years where I'd go to run and I can easily run the 6-minute pace. Not easily, but it's not like I can do it. But it doesn't feel as good as it used to. There's something not right. But I definitely can't get to 5. And so I could say I've tried everything. It just is what it is. I'm 37 years old, not going to do it. But because I'm in this valley of despair, it actually gets me more curious. And I say, okay, then I must still have something that I haven't corrected. There's something bothering me in my left lower back. There's something bothering me that's affecting the sciatic nerve. And this week I'm doing a couple new things that have helped, including this stretch for my internal rotation. But when you think about the journey this way and say stage one honeymoon, you could be excited. Then it will be over. And you're gonna have to go through some valley.
Valley of despair.
Small, large, some valley is gonna happen.
You're gonna climb the hill, it's gonna be in the mud.
But that's the only way to get to stage four, which is habits. And that's what I'm doing with my running. That's what we teach about health is you got to create these habits. Stage five, though, becomes ritual. And ritual requires very little energy and effort because
That's how the habits are built. Once the habits start getting in to become a habit, we all have habits. But I think what you said at the very, just back up for a second, I think the big one is people have to have a process that they start believing in. And it's like you playing golf or anything, it's you have to go through some of the challenges to get you on the other side. And some of the hardest stuff that we go through is the best stuff, but you have to go through it to get to because it's always going to be raining. Sometimes I'm going to just keep, you know, going on my journey. So I think that's the thing I always try to get people to, including myself, nobody's immune to this, is that you have to challenge yourself a little bit, that it is going to get bumpy. It can be rough. It can be hard, but as you come out the other side, you're looking at your leg, for example, that's a possibility. You're not giving up because I'm like, I know this can be better. So that's really what you have to get people and coach them about. What do you want? And then what's your driver? What's your emotional piece behind that? That it can happen. And then from there, we start building it out.
And you have to believe anything's possible. And that's a choice that some of us have and some of us struggle with. So as we work through this behavior change, step one, self-awareness. Step two, what do you want? Step three is the emotional engine, the why. Then we get into these small steps. Step four, build one small step at a time. And I think that and when we talked about supplements and creatine and pre-workouts and post-workouts and protein powders, and we're going to give you some of these steps. And I want you to continue to think about some of these steps, but you don't want to do five things at once because you're not going to be able to develop a habit. And so one small step is better than no steps at all. And what happens is, and we tell the story about grandpa and other clients that we've had where we really want to help them and we overwhelm them. And so the focus is, and that's why we talked about behavior change today, is you're going to get bombarded with information. You should intermittent fast. You should do the hot and cold therapy like I talked about. You should be taking, everyone should be taking creatine and pre-workouts. You start to realize there's way, 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 way too much information. And you pare it back and you say, what's the first step that I need to do? That's why we talk about rest, eat, and move. We've created those stepping stones. Rest is always first, nutrition number two, and then movement. Now, for that simple, maybe take that out and say, what area in rest do I need to focus on? What area in eat do I need to focus on? What area in exercise do I need to focus on? And you start with one at a time. Atomic Habits writes about it. Every habit book writes about it. You can really only do one thing at a time.
Yeah, Fogg writes about it. One of the things I really like this thought, because again, we've been talking about it for a long time. But once you start building this out, your self-awareness, and think about what you truly want, and you start diving in, and again, challenge yourself on what's your emotional piece. That's the why. Could be small, could be large. But then you think about, what do I want to do? But you have to have a place and a time for your habit. If I get up in the morning and my goal is to drink more water because I want to have better energy, better digestion, I have to have a place and a time. And if you don't have a place and a time, like I'll ask people, tell me your movement plan. When are you going to do it? Where are you going to do it? So if you don't have that, it's just a whim. It might happen.
I'm thinking about remodeling my basement to do an exercise, but what are you going to do tomorrow?
So you have to have a place. And again, that's why I'm a big fan. If you're going to design something at home, the place needs to be inviting. It needs to be something you enjoy doing. And then when am I going to do it? Have a routine that you're doing regularly, like whether it's 8 a.m. or whatever it is, but you have a place and a time for your habit.
That's interesting. A question we both get is, when's the best time to exercise? When's the best time to take cod liver oil? When's the best time to take wheatgrass? When's the best time to take a nap? Again, I'm not saying that's the wrong question, but if you don't have a place and a time, me telling you when the best time is actually not the first step.
So for example, let's go back in here. So the self-awareness is that, let's just say you did a blood test and your omega-3 saturation level is not where it is, or you don't even know that. You just need to know, I got more inflammation, my cholesterol profile is not where I want it to be, my glucose is starting to rise, I got to get my cells softer, more permeable. How do you do that? Well, that's an omega-3 fat. And then my vitamin D is not where it should be. So that's now I'm interested in that cod liver oil because I'm interested in those goals. And then you say, okay, so part of that is I develop my why. I want to be healthy, this and that. But then my step is I'm going to put that cod liver oil in my refrigerator. That's the place. And the time I'm going to do it is when I get up in the morning. So as soon as I open it up, that's my place and time. Now I got that habit going on. And then as we move into the next thing, we start looking at, okay, now we monitor it. My glucose is better. My inflammation is less. My cholesterol profile looks better. So now you have a way to monitor that, which is, leads us into the next one. So I really, everybody out there, if you're trying to develop a new habit, find a place and a time for that habit to live.
Yeah. And again, I think that's for cod liver oil, that's exactly how to do it. And I think everyone does have space and time and place for that. But sometimes you get the question, when's the best time to exercise? I think ideally the best time to exercise is probably around 10:30, 11 a.m. Not everybody has the place and the time to do that. And so you have to, before you ask that question, when's the best time? What's the research? What's the scientist say when? You got to ask, when can I do it?
Yeah. So if you asked me like tomorrow, when am I going to move my body? I'm going to tell you, I look at my calendar. I already know, looking at it, I got a window here. That's when I'm going to do it. And where am I going to do it? Today, I'm going to go play paddleball at the mat, place and a time. And we do that at lunchtime. But that's only a couple of days a week. Tomorrow, my place is going to be here at our headquarters. And my time is going to be, you know, between 10:30 and noon because I have a window. So that's what I want everybody to think about, whatever it is. If I get up in the morning, like today I was talking to a guy on the way over here and he's talking about, you know, planning and this and that. I said, do you have a cooler place and a time? So I don't have to worry about a time. I can have my cooler and then I can have everything in my cooler. So depending on what's going on, I can pivot during the day. So, but again, you're planning these things. But that's really, I think, the habits need to have a place in the time. And the more you do that, the success just rockets.
And then we get to step five, feedback. You got to measure. You got to have feedback. You have to have the courage to measure. We talked about taking constructive criticism or feedback. And there's many ways to measure. We talked about Know Your Numbers last week. There's scales, there's pants, there's digestion, there's the body's talking back, energy, skin, hair, nails, breath. You got to use feedback.
One of the things is many men, as they get older, do not want to see their primary care doctor because they're afraid of something. But there's no way to, how do you know? Just have the courage to measure. Like if you... I tell a story about Eric on The Biggest Loser. He won the $250,000 way back in the day, and he went from 400 pounds to 198 and was a rock star overnight. And then a year and a half later, I'm watching this health channel, and they interviewed him again. And he was talking about where you are today. They want to go see where he was 2 years later. And they asked him the question of, how much do you weigh today? He said, I've gained some weight back. I'm not sure what, but got on a scale and it was really emotional. And he weighed over 412 pounds. He gained all his weight back and it was very emotional, but he never measured. He didn't have the courage because he knew he gained weight, but he thought he weighed 300. He weighed 400.
Yeah. 10 here, 10 there, 20 here.
So I think we all need to weigh, like whether it's last week we talked about blood work, get your blood work at least once a year. Go back in time, whether you're 35 or 65 or whatever. But you have to have that. You need to get on a scale. Everybody needs to get on a scale once in a while. You don't have to do it every day. For many different reasons. You need to look at all these self-awareness tools, but we need to have some way to monitor and measure and see if I'm getting where I want to be. And then it allows you to go back and maybe pivot a little bit. What's working? What's not working? How do I make it the way I like it? It doesn't have to be the perfect way, but that's the fun part, is now you're developing habit that's your habit.
And there's always progressions to measurements. So if I'm measuring my internal rotation, that probably can do some things that I'm comfortable with and say, it's pretty good still. I'm doing this new one where you can't really cheat it. And you say, it's not where I thought it was. Or maybe you haven't even, my kids like monkey bars. And I try to encourage them to do monkey bars so that they can expel some energy. I remember being able to do monkey bars like the easiest thing in the world. I challenge anyone to go try monkey bars. It's not easy. And so at some point, even for me that does pull-ups and strength trains, I lost the self-awareness around it. Can I do the monkey bars anymore? Because I wasn't doing the monkey bars. Well, and it's actually eye-opening how challenging the monkey bars are.
It was interesting. I think I can. They were at the park and we're doing the monkey bars. I'm like, holy moly, Grandpa can't do the monkey bars anymore. And I was like, I can do a pull-up. I can do multiple pull-ups, but
we get, again, self-awareness. We get comfortable in our own.
Holy cow. I'm going to have to lose 50 pounds to be able to do the monkey bars again. But it really hit me like, I can't do the monkey bars. But again, it's not about being perfect.
And you're going to lose things. And that's okay.
You're going to lose them. And that's okay.
And that's okay. And
so we're going to be, it's here. We're going to be water skiing soon. Yeah, I'll be water skiing again. But it doesn't make sense for me to try to get up on one ski anymore. I can get up on one ski.
Yeah.
But I have a kind of a tweaked hamstring. I'm like, I'm not going to do that, but I'm going to get up, drop one ski. But
at this point, it's not worth you tweaking that, but you can drop a ski.
Again, it's just the self-awareness. I'm aware that, you know, that maybe that's not the smartest thing for me. We were skiing back in February and we went backcountry skiing and it was awesome. The guys I went with were just awesome. And the guide, I was teasing her and the guide was like my age and she was phenomenal. She was from, I think, West Virginia and moved out to Colorado. And I was talking to her and we got out and this is our last run. And she says, by the way, there's a jump down here if you guys want to hit it. And I said, how fast can I hit it? Can I go? She goes, it's a pretty big jump. So I was amping her up that she says, you're going to really hit that jump that fast? I'm like, listen, I'm not going to hit any jump. At my age, if I go off the ground, it's an accident. And she starts to laugh. She goes, that's how I feel. I'm like, yeah, I'm not 25 anymore. I'm not going to hit this jump. But that's the self-awareness that, hey, that doesn't make sense for me to do that.
You ever see Legos hit the ground from 10 feet?
See Humpty Dumpty go in a bunch of pieces?
So today, I think this topic needs to be spread virally, but it won't. And that's why we're doing it today. It requires effort. Change requires a journey, and it's worth the journey, but you got to do it in a systematic way. And as we wrap up today, do you have anything else you want to share?
Yeah, I want to share one thing. So at the last section of the book, and it really, I wanted to wrap this up, and it was the funnest part of writing the book was all about behavior, motivation, willpower, momentum. But I really liked the last part about just let it rain. And what do I mean by that? It will rain. It rains on everybody. And some of the hardest things we go through, that's the rain, but it's some of the best stuff. So again, when the rain comes out, don't run from the rain, don't run from the, but embrace it. And that, and as time goes on, you look back and you're like, wow, that's really interesting. And that's really powerful. So I think today, when we're talking about behavior change, it will rain, but embrace the rain.
It's one of my favorite songs, Phil Collins. Okay, I love that. Let it rain. And I was going to wrap up with this piece that you have in the book, and it's a Socrates quote. And it says, the secret of change is to focus all your energy not on fighting the old, but building the new. And I think that really resonates as we're trying to create this behavior change. Don't just focus on the action or what's trending or the new exciting thing. Understand that it begins with self-awareness. You got to have a want. Get specific. I encourage you to find an emotional connection. That's not always going to happen easily. And then we start to do this one step at a time, measure. And back to what I said in the middle of the podcast, I believe it's possible to break a 5-minute mile for me. Some people from the outside would say you're losing the time element. But when you come through the lens of anything is possible, you start to think about what I'm going to do to create a lifestyle that I want.
The other thing too, even if you don't break the 5-minute mile,
yeah,
it's not about that. It's not about getting the sword. It's not about getting the trophy. It's not about the 5-minute mile. It's about the process that you go through to get there.
I wouldn't play golf if the only thing that I cared about was winning the tournament, because you're not going to win every tournament.
I'm not going to
win. And you may not win any tournaments.
I'm not going to win any tournaments.
Yeah, and again, there's a lot of professional golfers, a lot of NBA players, NFL, that will never win the championship.
But I think sometimes we don't think, we have to think of success as winning the trophy. That's not the success. The success is that you're putting the effort in to try to get better. That's, in my opinion, that's it. I'm trying to get better. If it doesn't always happen, but I'm going to try to get better. And there's so many other benefits that come with that. And I think that's the big takeaway is it's not about being perfect. It never will be. It's not about winning the sword or the trophy. It's about going through the process and pivoting and then trying to be the best you can.
So let's not focus on fighting the old, but let's build the new. And we're on our way out the door. We're going to go try some monkey bars. So we'll see you again next time.